One thing that I tell banks to begin with, before you even think about how do I post about this loan, is make a decision. Are you really using reviews? Is that a good avenue for you to be collecting true reviews on your bank? And if it's not, turn it off. Because what I see so often is banks have that. It's just sitting out there. And when I go and look at a bank, there might be 13 terrible things, whether it's true reviews, and they're usually not true reviews. They're usually clickbait. So turn that off.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Jill Williams. Jill began her community banking career in 1995 and brings more than 30 years of experience serving financial institutions, both in leadership, senior leadership roles inside community banks, and now as an advisor and compliance partner to banks nationwide. She is the co-owner of Spring Media Solutions and founder of Bank Monitor, a proprietary full-service social media compliance and risk monitoring platform built specifically for banks and credit unions. Bank Monitor helps financial institutions identify, manage, document, and remediate regulatory and reputational risk in full alignment with the FFIEC guidance and related regulations. As a recognized thought leader in social media risk management, for financial institutions, Jill helps executive teams confidently manage regulatory scrutiny, emerging scam activity, and evolving social risk with practical, defensible risk management solutions. Welcome, Jill. We are so glad to have you.
Thanks so much. I'm glad we're talking about this. Social media has changed so much just in the last 2 years, and so it's a great topic for today.
Yes, I am super pumped about our conversation. But first, here at Banking Matters, we always like to hear how our guests got their start in banking.
Oh, wow. Okay. I started my banking career in 1995, not because I thought, ooh, I want to be a banker the rest of my life. Honestly, I was in my mid-20s and was like, that sounds like a pretty stable thing to do. I did grow up in banking with lots of family members being involved in banking. But once I got in, I started with a small community bank and created their human resources department. And it went from there. And it was awesome. Community bankers are awesome. And I think it gets in your blood. Because even though I am not what I call working in bank proper, because I've left banking and do this full time, I still, all of my clients are bankers, and I swear, I think all of my friends are still bankers.
Yes, no, I fully agree. I grew up in high school and college thinking I'm going to be a CPA, but during college I worked part-time and full-time during the summers for a bank doing literally anything they would let me do. And I went and worked for a firm for 3 entire months this summer after I graduated. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I had to come back. It is like, I just never considered banking as a career for me, for my interest, for my brain. And so the amount of guests that I have spoken with that have the exact same oops kind of jump into banking. I know now lately there's been such a huge push for explaining that banking can be a career, reminding kids these days that, hey, this really can be such a sustainable career. And there are so many different avenues that banks need skill sets in. And so I am really excited to see what the next generation of bankers look like, how they come into it. Are they going to be prepared? Are we going to have certifications kind of coming up more? So I'm excited about the future of banking, I will say.
Same.
Yes. And so jumping into social media, can you clarify what the FFIEC actually requires around social media? And then also, is that negotiable based on asset size or how active they are?
Okay, that's a great question, because I think there is some confusion around what exactly the FFIEC is and what is this guidance that they came down with. So the FFIEC is not a regulatory agency. It is, it's a council made up of representation from all the regulatory agencies like the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, the OCC, the CFPB and the NCUA. So it's a conglomeration, and what these folks have come together to do is to give us guidance so we can follow the real regulations, such as, you know, truth in lending, truth in savings, and all the alphabet soup of banking when it comes to social media. I mean, they obviously do other things besides social media, but we're talking about social. So just to clear that up, they are not a regulatory agency, and the guidance itself that came down in 2013 isn't a law. It's really the framework that was put together so that banks know what they need to do, what they're required to do to comply with the laws and the regulations, from a regulatory standpoint, from reputational risk, operational risk, and even legal risk. So it's really kind of the roadmap that examiners and auditors use when they are going into a bank to determine how banks are managing their social media risk program. So it's not a law, it's not a regulatory agency, but what it does is it gives that roadmap. And so it's a great place for banks to truly focus and look at that guidance and say, are we doing all those things? So is it negotiable? No. Does it depend on the size of the bank, the asset size, or the engagement on their social? And the answer to that is no. The guidance allows you, it is risk-based. So the higher risk your social platforms are, obviously you need to have more processes in place to protect you. But if a bank is in social, it's non-negotiable. You have to follow these guidelines, and you have to have these certain policies in place and procedures and protections to protect your bank from all those risks. So it's not a negotiable. And honestly, I see some very small banks as far as asset size who have a huge following and very engaged audience. Well, that's a lot of risk for a little bitty bank. And then I have banks that are large that really don't use social that much, and they don't have a whole lot of engagement. So even the size of the bank doesn't equal the risk that they have.
Yes. And I know that risk-based procedures and policies, that is what we're going to be looking at throughout every aspect of banking. And so I love that you showed how even small can still have such a large risk exposure with social, and even with large, like a bank can choose how far they go into the water. But what you are saying is that no matter what, we've still got to look at these guidelines and make sure that we are following them.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so is there something that banks can implement now to improve how they create, approve, and post compliant social media content?
Absolutely. There's actually even some things that they can do even before they're trying to post compliantly. And a couple of things that I always tell banks is, you know, and I'm going to use Facebook as an example, because when banks started entering social back in 2007, the early adopters, you know, Facebook had reviews built in, for example. It's just what was done. And honestly, back then, even all the way up through probably 2019, Facebook reviews were used, and people would go to Facebook and look at reviews. You know, I want to go to this restaurant. Is this where, do I really want to go there? What are people saying about it? And so that was kind of built in. Same thing with private messages. And what I tell banks now is reviews really aren't used the way they were intended to begin with. It's grown. You know, now we have Google reviews. I mean, I don't know. When's the last time you went to Facebook to see if a restaurant, if you thought you wanted to go to that restaurant? You don't go to Facebook for that. But what happens is these banks who have been early adopters, that's still sitting out there. That is a playground for clickbait, scams, bots. So one thing that I tell banks to begin with, before you even think about how do I post about this loan, is make a decision. Are you really using reviews? Is that a good avenue for you to be collecting true reviews on your bank? And if it's not, turn it off. Because what I see so often is banks have that. It's just sitting out there. And when I go and look at a bank, there might be 13 terrible things, whether it's true reviews, and they're usually not true reviews. They're usually clickbait. So turn that off. Another piece is private messages. I would recommend for every bank to say, okay, are we using private messages truly as a customer service way to communicate with our customers? If they say yes, it's perfectly fine, but make sure that you're treating that just like you do your customer service, call center. Make sure you have someone manning it. Make sure they are responding. Make sure they understand, what do I need to take out of this? Because we're going to talk about a customer's debit card that got locked down, or they have a question about their loan payment. That can't happen in Facebook private messages. So they have to be trained on when to take that into a secure environment, whether it's, a phone call, a secure email, or coming into, a location to talk about that. If they say, no, we don't want that, but we have a whole lot of chatter, turn it off. It literally, you toggle it, it turns off. Because what we have found, especially in the past 2 years, is that is a great place for scams to happen. In the beginning, your Facebook has breached confidentiality, or it's breached our community guidelines. Click this link so your Facebook page doesn't get taken down. All that's clickbait. Those are all malicious links. But that's sitting out there. So if you choose not to use that truly as a customer service line, turn it off. No big deal. No harm, no foul there. Now, once you do that, then yes, there are definitely some things that are great for banks to do. And I always recommend doing like a quick checklist of, if you're creating posts, kind of like a, if I say this, then I have to say this. This is going to be revolving around things like, if you post a APY, if I say that, then I need to, spell out annual percentage yield. If I have a loan rate, do I have the disclosures in that post? If I post about a free account, do I have the conditions for that free account? If I post about a mortgage loan or a mortgage loan officer, do I have the correct NMLS number? Is it the bank's number? Is it the loan officer's number? Do I have equal housing lender? So just kind of a checklist of, if I say this, then I say this. That's a great place to start because it gives the content creator the confidence of, okay, we want to do these product posts, or we want to do these service posts, and I'm going to do it compliantly before I even send it off for final review. So that's always a great thing to have. And a lot of times too, making a note on that checklist that even if you're not posting about a product or a service, there's a lot of posts, even if it's just, hey, come see us, we love our customers. Something as generic as that, it still requires some things like the member FDIC logo. So having a checklist is a great handy tool for banks to use. I actually have a free guide that I think, Lindsay, you're going to attach to the show notes that you guys can download. It's just something super handy to have on your desk or on your desktop while you're posting. That's a good place to start because, honestly, moving into where social media is now, the biggest risk really is what comes after the post. So being confident in, this is what we're posting, I've got this down pat. Now all I have to worry about is what happens after we post.
Yes. And I will say, just from a compliance standpoint, I've been able to work with banks across the country in the last several years, and especially also to the banks that I've been in-house and worked with their marketing. There is such a trend that I have seen that banks shy away from posting anything that would be triggering to any of the additional disclosures because they don't want to mess up. And honestly, the thought process and the project management of having this checklist that does empower your content creator to be able to plainly see, okay, A equals B, and so I've got to have C on here. Just to empower them to be able to do that so that you guys can move forward, because I do agree that a large part of managing social media really does come after the post and how you handle and engage and monitor and check in on all of that.
That's such a great point. And I agree with you. I see that same trend of bank shying away. And honestly, regulators don't expect banks to be perfect. But what they do expect is that you are paying attention to what you're posting, what other people are posting. And when you see an issue, that you correct it and that you document, okay, we know we forgot to put those terms and conditions on this post on this day on Facebook. And this is what we did to correct it. And here's a corrected post. So you've got your documentation that we are paying attention and we are correcting things. So they don't expect us to be perfect, but they do expect us to know what's going on and to correct those things, not only from a bank standpoint, but also from, you know, the comments that are being made on those posts after you post them.
Yes, absolutely. And so kind of shifting gears a little bit, what are the biggest social media, the biggest social media compliance risk that you're seeing with banks right now?
Yeah, gosh, that has changed and it changes all the time, but it really has changed over the past few years. Again, I'll say it, it's not what the banks are posting, because banks are doing a really good job of that, especially now. You know, 2007, we were kind of the wild, wild west back then. And I can say that because I was the person posting for my bank and we didn't have those rules. Not that we were doing anything terrible, but we didn't have those guidelines. But now, you know, fast forward to 2026, banks know how to manage their social. I think they're doing a really good job from compliant posting. They've got someone dedicated who's, you know, managing their social and monitoring those comments that come through. That's not the big risk. The big risk now is what happens after that compliant, nice post goes live. Because that's where the risk is. And if it happens on your proprietary social sites, the bank is responsible for that. Responsible for the risk involved, whether it's compliance, legal, reputational, or operational. I'm going to give you some real life examples of things that are happening right now. Now, if we did this a year ago, there'd be different examples. And if we did this podcast a year from now, they're going to be different examples. But right now, and I'm sure some of your listeners, I'm going to say the vast majority of your listeners are going to go, oh my gosh, that's happened to us. Banks are great about doing like contest giveaways where they ask questions and, you know, they garner all this engagement, which is amazing. Those are great posts. But then what we see happening, so say it's a giveaway post and it closes at whatever day, and then the bank gives away a prize. Lots of engagement. Lots of real engagement. Then what happens is users, typically bots these days, will come in on a highly engaged post and they will start responding to those comments. And what we see a lot is that commenter or bot, actually, they have created a Facebook persona that looks like the bank. So they're replying on Susie's answer saying, you've won. And that, you know, the profile pic looks like the bank because, I mean, how easy is it to grab a logo, right? And if it's abcbank.com, it might be ab-c. Very, very slight change in the user to where if somebody just looked at it, they would see the logo, they would see the bank's name, they would think, oh, this is the bank, I've won. In that, it usually is a link maybe to, we've seen this, a website that when you click on it, it literally looks like it's branded as the bank. And what they're doing is they're phishing, obviously, for, you know, that person's information so they can do all the terrible things that phishing attempts do. So we see that a lot. And what happens is when a post has a lot of engagement like that, so that user is coming in and not blasting the bank in a comment. They're communicating now with your customers or your followers, people in your community. The bank's responsible for that. And so that we're seeing a lot of that. This just happened in the past 2 weeks, and I'm sure you may have even done this. A couple of weeks ago, there was this big thing. It was a trend on social, big on Facebook, but even Instagram and LinkedIn, where you put a prompt into AI that says, create a caricature of me, of what you know about me. And so what happened, and it went huge. Y'all, it was so cute. Like, these caricatures were so good looking. It was great, except for it created a lot of compliance implications for banks, because bank employees, all of a sudden it's Jill, and behind me, it's my bank logo. It's a caricature, but it looks like my bank logo, and say I'm a loan officer. So, on my cute little desk, there are papers that say guaranteed approval, 100% financing, all these trigger terms that require additional disclosures and terms and conditions. Well, because that is tied to the bank now, the bank's responsible for that. So there was a lot of compliance implications that revolved around that. And I'm going to tell you, for 2 days, my phone and my email blew up over that situation. So that's the newest thing that's happened. Another thing that we're seeing, and this will be my third and last example, is what I'm going to call activist. So there's the whole First Amendment activist situation where people are videoing in front of your bank, trying to get a rise out of your branch managers to say, you can't video here, you have to leave. And they're doing this not to, as they say, educate the public, but to monetize themselves. So it's really, we're seeing a lot of that. And now that's filtering out of YouTube into places like Facebook. And so, all that happens on a bank post. So it's happening under the umbrella of the bank's social, but the bank didn't post it. So that's the biggest thing. And again, banks are doing a lot of things right. So it's not the effort that they're putting into their social media compliance. It's just the ability to understand and have the visibility of everything that's happening under your umbrella. So that's a big, difficult spot for banks to be in right now.
Absolutely. And one of my best friends is actually over their marketing department for their bank. And they have been talking about, because there was rumors of the First Amendment auditors, I think is what they try to call themselves, in the community. And so they were like having large team meetings of, hey, if this should happen, we need to do X, Y, and Z, because it will affect the bank and therefore be their responsibility. It's just, it is wild. But again, you've got to do what you've got to do to remain in control and aware. Like you said, it will fall under the bank's umbrella. And I think that is something, when I think back, especially because I started in marketing for a bank in 2014. And the concept of trying to grasp everything out on the internet that was related to the bank, that was probably the hardest piece to try to finagle for this small rural community bank, where it was just me who just happened to be the youngest and most technologically savvy person in the corporate side of things. And that's kind of how that happened. But that is such a hurdle to figure out.
It is. And a lot of banks, that's how they started, especially when you started in social media and banking. That's when really community banks, I said in 2007, the first bank entered social media, but really community banks really kind of started entering about 2009, 10, but in 2013, banks were getting there. So you got there right at the height of that. And typically that's how we chose who was going to run our social, the youngest, the one who always had a phone in their hand and they knew about Facebook. But then the guidance came down and says, you've got to follow all these guidelines. And it's very difficult to do that. And with, even back then, our biggest challenge, was reputation. Is somebody complaining about us? Is somebody saying something nasty about us? Did we post about that HELOC right? That's not the way it is anymore. So where we have people in the bank and it's their job to monitor, risk, social media risk doesn't just happen during the workday and during the work week. So it's impossible for, especially community banks, To be able to monitor, like what you're saying, and be aware and respond and document all those things. We're moving into an area of, we need software, we need technology to assist us, because we can't do it just humanly.
Yeah, absolutely. The World Wide Web is so huge. Yes. It really is. So hard. And so kind of sliding off of that, how can banks realistically prepare for that post-publication risk and prove to examiners that they are actually monitoring appropriately? Do you have tips for that?
Again, I'm going to say, I think banks are doing a lot of things right. We're again in 2026, banks have their policies and procedures in place. They usually have a dedicated marketing person or a marketing agency now. I see a lot of community banks who now employ marketing agencies to handle their social. So we're doing a lot of things right. They're monitoring, they're responding to comments. But again, it's what happens after that. And when your person goes home for the day or the weekend or they're on vacation, how do we prove to examiners that we are watching everything that's happening. We're capturing it, we're monitoring it, and we're responding to it appropriately, and we're documenting that. And that's the thing, we've got to be able to prove, no longer. And I will say, because I've helped banks with prepare for their exams for years now. And I will say years ago, maybe even just 5 years ago, examiners might say, so are you monitoring your social? And banks would go, oh, yeah, Jane in marketing, she monitors that. And she comes in first thing in the morning, she does this. And they go, okay, good, check. Okay, that's not what they're asking anymore. They're asking for, I want to see everything that hit your social sites for the past 16 months. So they're asking for their expectations. The guidance hasn't changed at all, but their expectations have. So we need to be able to prove this to them, what's happening and how we're documenting it and how we're remediating this risk. I'll give you an example and then I'll be able to tell you how this can be handled so you can prove to examiners. This is a real story. There was a bank that hired a new loan officer. And so they did a social media post welcoming this young man. It was a great post. It happened on Friday. Tons of engagement. Lots of congratulatory comments. We love this guy, yada, yada, yada. Exactly what you want to have. So all day long, engagement happened, even some on Saturday. Sunday night at 11:45 p.m., someone in their community chimed in on the bank's post. Okay, so he went to the bank's page, saw the post, does not like this young man at all. It was very apparent because he then proceeded to make comments very derogatory about this young man. Used extremely foul language that I will not repeat, then proceeded to tell the story of that he was having inappropriate relations with a significant other, just like he did at ABC Bank where he came from. So even called out another bank. This is true. This happened recently. This happened at 11:45 at night. Do you think the bank was monitoring their social? No. That's hours before a banker heads back into the office on Monday morning. So all that to say, banks now really need to figure out, how do we monitor when we're not monitoring? How are we going to do that? And that's when technology comes into place. We've made leaps and bounds on the technology that we have these days. But to be able to have software that captures, because some scheduling platforms that banks are using, you can capture everything you've created and you posted. So you can prove that to examiners. But the vast majority of those programs aren't capturing what users are saying, and they're definitely not analyzing those comments for reputational risk, regulatory, all the risks that we talked about. So banks now need to determine, how do we capture that so we can prove and document that we knew what happened and this is what we did about it. And here's the proof to the examiners and the regulators when they ask. So that I think is the next big challenge for banks, is to know what's happening and have the ability to prove to examiners, we did know, we did analyze it, and this is what we did about it.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because literally thinking back, I remember one of my biggest concerns was, well, the examiners, they're going to ask to see a post that you've deleted, even if it was just an error, and we would have to print it off and show them. And I would have to document on there or on the spreadsheet why the justification for deleting it. And so now, like I've said, there's been so much that has changed to make this such a much larger. And like you said, it is weekends, it is 24/7. And that there is such a large gap for that in normal working hours. And how do you expect that of an employee? And so I'm fully in agreement with the fact that technology has got to be what is filling that gap.
Yes. Yeah. And with the onset of AI, it really has, you know, I've been doing what I do since 2013, before that even, because I was managing social, but managing the risk side of it since 2013. And, you know, there would be incremental things that would happen. I'd go, oh my gosh, now we have to deal with that. Now we have to figure that out. It's not incremental. It's like every week you wake up and go, now what can AI do? Now, wait, there are armies of bots now that are targeting, you know, not just one bank page, but multiple at one time. And it's crazy what's going on. So we've got to, I don't want to say fight, but we've got to use technology to protect us against the technology that maybe not so nice people are using.
Yes, absolutely. And Jill, this has been such an amazing conversation. And here at Banking Matters, we do always like to wrap up with one piece of advice that you would like to leave our listeners.
Okay. Yeah. So I think I would say, you know, for banks who are in social, you know, you're doing a lot of things right. I know I keep saying that, but I would challenge banks to really look and say, who's, you know, we're monitoring, we're doing all these things and we're doing them right, but who's protecting the bank when we're not watching? And I think that just goes back to understanding the risk that's happening when you're not sitting at your desk. And, you know, when Susan or, you know, Matthew is not monitoring, how are we protecting the bank that way? And there, you know, there are things that you can do to do that. So I think that would be my advice, is to really look in the mirror and say, who's protecting the bank when we're not watching?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jill. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.